Welcome to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast, which is coming to you from Paris-Nice, the race to the sun. My name is Lionel Burney, and I'm joined by Ciro Scondomiglio, the cycling correspondent for the Italian sports paper Gazzetta dello Sport. I'm certain your array of fans are delighted you're back, Ciro. Are you happy to be here?
Yes, I'm really happy to be here. We are here in the race toward the sun. We are in the sun now. And Lionel, we are working hard every day. Our friends, our colleague, Daniel Friebe and Richard Moore, they were part of the podcast, important part of the podcast last year, but I don't know now where they are, maybe in all these days. I don't know. I don't see them.
Terrible accusation that they might be on holiday, Ciro. I'm not sure what they'll make of that.
Et le nouveau maillot jaune, accueilli par Bernardino, le Britannique Geraint Thomas, double champion olympique.
That's Daniel Monjas announcing Geraint Thomas in the yellow jersey. Okay, so we're in Belleville, which basically translates as beautiful town. Not seen much of the town yet, but we're sat outside the Hotel de Ville, as Ciro said, in the sunshine. Stage 4 has finished not long ago, and Tom Jelte Slagter, Slagter means butcher in English, won the fourth stage for Garmin Sharp, and Sky's Geraint Thomas has taken the yellow jersey. And this is what Geraint had to say in the press conference afterwards.
Geraint, you said yesterday that today would be the first important stage of the race, but your move, was that predetermined to go then, or were you reacting to the move from Slagter?
To be honest, I didn't really think. It was kind of like racing as a junior again and just going. And once I went, I was like, what the hell am I doing? This is, you know, it's, I remember saying this morning, it's 14k, it's a long way to go, and it's quite a lot of flat. But once you're committed, and, you know, we worked well together, and I knew they'd probably start messing around behind, especially if there wasn't many in the same team. And, yeah, that played into our hands really well. And it's just unfortunate that the last K, obviously, Stagger was wanted to win the stage, as I did, but... you know, he sort of called my bluff a bit, and I could see the group coming, and I didn't want to just mess about and, you know, waste all that energy for nothing. So I kept riding, and I knew he was going to jump me, and he did, and I didn't quite get onto his wheel. I was sort of like that bike length behind all the way in. Yeah, to take the jersey is incredible, really. I never really thought that would happen, and yeah, it's just a privilege, you know. Paris-Nice is one of the biggest stage races on the calendar, you know, behind the Grand Tours, and it's just unbelievable, really. I didn't really dream of being in this position, especially a week ago. You know, it was only Friday when I was told I'd be the Allan Abbott leader for this race. Obviously, with Richie moving to Tirreno, so it's a very special day for me, really, personally.
So, 10 years ago, in 2004, Geraint Thomas and Ian Stannard finished first and second in the Junior Paris-Roubaix, which was held on the same day as the pro race and finished in the Velodrome in Roubaix, maybe 2 or 3 hours before the pro race arrived. And actually, as they approached the Velodrome, they were both away with a chase group pursuing them. Stannard took a wrong turning slightly, leaving Thomas free to basically go into the Velodrome and take the victory. Stannard recovered to take second place. But it's just interesting that 10 years on, that generation of riders who perhaps have grown up a little bit in the shadow of all of Mark Cavendish's success, and obviously Bradley Wiggins winning the Tour, it's interesting that they've had such a good fortnight, really, with Stannard winning Het Nieuwsblad and now Geraint Thomas leading Paris-Nice.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. Interviews and analysis. We've got the big talking points covered.
Four stages down, four to go. It's fair to say the first three stages were fairly run-of-the-mill sprints, although there were a couple of stories to come out of them. Nasser Bouhanni won the opening stage, and this year, unlike last year when he also won the opening stage, this year he managed to defend his yellow jersey, whereas last year he crashed while wearing it. The second stage was probably more notable for Gianni Meersman's prolonged pursuit of the Quickstep, the Amiga Pharma Quickstep team car, after he crashed near the finish of the stage. and he was trying to get back up to contest the sprint, which was won by Moreno Hofland of the Belkin team. And then yesterday's stage three, was won by John Degenkolb on the motor racing circuit at Magny-Cours, and that was not necessarily a new experience for Degenkolb, because he won a stage of the 2012 Vuelta on the motor racing circuit in Aragon in Spain. Really, today's the stage where the race has come alive, and Geraint Thomas has perhaps answered Christian Prudhomme's criticism of the Sky team, because the story on the eve of the race was that Richie Porte, the defending champion, who was due to start Paris-Nice, pulled out to replace Chris Froome, who's suffering with a bit of a back injury. Froome pulled out of Tirreno Adriatico, Porte moved over to ride in Italy, and that elevated Geraint Thomas to team leadership, and Prudhomme wasn't terribly happy about that. But I spoke to Dave Brailsford on the second morning of the race, just for his reaction, and this is what Dave had to say about Sky reshuffling the pack.
It was a bit late in the day, I think that's fair to say. However, when you look at it, I think these two races, simultaneously, two World Tour races, and you want to try and get as many World Tour points as possible. I think within the sport, and for teams, World Tour ranking points are ever so important. More so than maybe the outside world might perceive. I'm not sure how many people look at the World Tour sort of league table and go, oh, well, that's important to see as a relevant kind of measurement. But I think certainly within the team, we consider it to be very, very important. And the situation was very simple, really. At the start of the week, Chris aggravated a back problem. It's not a big deal, really, but enough to make us think, if it's one of those things that if you don't let it settle down and get on top of it, get rid of it, then it could persist. It's one of those sort of niggly things where you think, actually, we just need some rest. And not totally off the bike, but just some rest. So we thought, actually, the conservative thing to do would be to take him out of Tirreno for the time being, bring him back into Catalonia, of course, with an eye, more on the big summer events. So that kind of left us in a bit of a predicament, really, because we entered Richie into Paris-Nice knowing full well that he's a defending champion, he should come here. And then when Paris-Nice when they announced the race, because we don't know the race when we have to select our teams, which is a bit of a difficulty in this sport. So you kind of then the race says, well, here's the race that we're going to put on this year. And then you realise there's no hilltop finish, there's no time trial, the course has been changed dramatically, which is entirely the right of the organiser, and it's one of the joys of this sport, is that you never quite know what the race is going to be like every year. But what was quite clear was that it wasn't a race that suited Richie Porte's particular talents, and so we decided actually we would leave him in the race even though we thought he couldn't win it, or the chances of him being competitive were much less than a traditional Paris-Nice. But of course, when Froome got pulled out of Tirreno, and we know that Tirreno suits Richie much more, and we also know that given that Richie's going to ride the Giro, to ride in Italy at Tirreno would make a lot of sense. We then sat down and thought, actually, Geraint we know is going really, really well, and in fact we were thinking that Geraint was going to be the leader here anyway, so really we got Richie in a race over here which he was coming to be a participant in, really to support, whereas if we swapped him over, he could go into a race where we'd lost our leader, as it were, and he potentially could lead the team in a race which suits his ability. So from a performance point of view, it was a no-brainer for us. But of course, from an organiser's point of view, I think it's a bit frustrating for them late in the day that the reigning champion gets pulled out.
So you can kind of understand Christian Prudhomme's comments. He went public with his disappointment that Richie wasn't going to be here to defend his title, but I guess you can see his point as well.
No, I can see his point totally, but I think the organisers, organise races, and they choose a race, the terrain and the style of race that it's going to be, and we pick the teams.
Is it a source of frustration as well? It's historic, it's not a new thing, but Paris-Nice and Tirreno, two World Tour races, overlap with one another. You can't be in two places at once. I gather you're going to do a few days here, see how it pans out, and then possibly go into Tirreno for the second half of that. It does feel like something needs to be sorted out and shifted with the calendar, because teams, although a lot of the teams have got much bigger resources than in previous years, everything's spread across events, and the focus of the watching public is split between two races for half a week at least.
I agree. I totally agree, actually. And I think you can't, you know, if you imagine the top 20 or 30% of the riders in the world, you know, they're all going to get split. They have to make a choice. Am I going to do Terrain or I'm going to do Paris-Nice? And because the course comes out relatively late, you tend to find that previously the classics guys would tend to, traditionally, they would tend to favour Tirreno Adriatico and go from there into Milan-San Remo and then go on to the classics. And the GC guys would come over to Paris-Nice. But that's been thrown at its head, for example, this year. And I think it is a shame, because I think that in an ideal world, the calendar would allow the teams to focus on one World Tour race at a time. And we could plan appropriately. We could put the best riders in. They could prepare to the best possible level to make it a great race. And then, you know, a week or so later, you'd have another great race, which would be Paris. So we're getting a double hit rather than diluting it as it is at the minute. You know, and I think from a TV audience point of view, from a commercial point of view, and in terms of the growing numbers of people who are coming into the sport and thinking, oh, I quite like cycling. I'm new to cycling. Let me try and figure out the cycling calendar and how this sport works. It's so confusing. I constantly trying to sit down and explain how the cycling calendar works, and you know, it's not easy to be honest. So I think if we had a set number of World Tour races, all appropriately spaced out, which attracted the best riders to those races, they were televised. There was a season long kind of competition that grew, so you could see what the rankings were, you could see what the team rankings were, the individual rankings were, the best sprinter, the best climber, the best time trialist, etc. Then you have something to progressively follow. There's a narrative through the season which people can get excited about, and it's not complicated, and I think it'll happen, to be honest, so that'd be good.
Well, we'll hear a little bit more from Brailsford later in the show, but Ciro, this is your first time in Paris-Nice. Normally you would be at Tirreno Adriatico, a big important race for the Italian cyclists, but you're here instead. Why is that?
Yes, mainly for the presence of Vincenzo Nibali here, and you know that now he is the most important Italian rider, and for sure this year he will target the Tour de France, and so for that he has decided to do a different program. And so my chief has been clear at the beginning of the year, where is Vincenzo? Gazzetta dello Sport has to be, and so that's why.
Well, you are the voice of Vincenzo Nibali, really, because you write the column, ghostwrite the column for him in the newspaper. Do you still do that?
No, not for the moment. I mean, we did sometimes in last Tour de France, but as a matter of fact, in the last period, in last months, I mean, I did also races in February in Dubai and Oman, for example. Vincenzo was there, and as a matter of fact, in the last months, I'm seeing Vincenzo more than my friends or my parents, and so it's a little bit then something that maybe it's a worry for me, but it's like that for the moment.
Is he not fed up with you yet? You're always just around the corner stalking him.
Yes, exactly, and for that I'm trying to be careful, because the season is so long. We should arrive to the Tour de France and so later, so it's better to be careful. I'm really always with him, but with description.
Now, Nibali being here, it's a little bit unusual, because the parkour of the race does not suit him at all. There's no time trial, there's no significant uphill finish, although we didn't see too much of him today on the climb that was about 14 or 15 kilometres from the end. What do you think is the reason for him being here?
In my opinion, it's also the main question is a question of relationships between his team and the ASO organization. You know, Paris-Nice is organized by ASO, the same organizer of the Tour de France, and for them it had important to be here with Vincenzo, I mean, in this race, because as a matter of fact, as you said before, the majority of champions is in Tirreno Adriatico. So I mean, in my opinion, it's a politic question, and also the fact that Vincenzo, he will do the Tour de France to try to win the yellow jersey, and he wanted to do something different comparing with the last years. He will do also, for example, normally at this moment, a race as Tour of Romandy that he never did more or less in the past. So a changement in function of the Tour de France. But the main reason, in my opinion, it's a political question, the will of Astana and boss Alexander Vinogulo to stay in good relation with with Eso.
Yeah, because Nibali, he traditionally has done Tirreno Adriatico, and obviously when he was targeting the Giro, that makes perfect sense. But this year, I gather, he will do Paris-Nice, the Dauphiné in June,
and then into
the Tour de France. So I guess he's sort of re-familiarising himself with France and with the ASO organisation. But in terms of the race itself, is there anything of value for him here? Because is it going to be hard enough to give him the racing condition to go forward in the season? Is there enough of an opportunity to test himself?
In my opinion, yes, and I explain why. In the last 2 years, he was able to win Tirreno Adriatico on a very tough parkour, but this year, at this point of the year, he has not the same condition. So maybe because he spent the winter, with a lot of things to do, because he's the winner of the Giro d'Italia, his wife is pregnant, only 2 weeks ago he became a father, and so he hasn't the same condition. And so, in my opinion, Tirreno Adriatico at this period of the year would have been so too much tough for him, and so maybe here with the different parkour, maybe he can improve better than in Tirreno. Yeah,
and I assume with the Pompiana climb not being in Milan San Remo and La Mani not being in, that race is not the same objective for Nibali as perhaps in the past.
Not at all. And as a matter of fact, in my opinion, now his participation is not 100% sure. I think that the team has the intention to make a point after the Paris-Nice, and then they will decide. For sure, I don't want to say that he won't be in Milan-San Remo. Maybe he could participate. For the moment, it's not sure. But with this parkour, certainly, he arrived third in 2012. There were Le Manie. Now this year without money, I don't think it can be a factor in Milan-San Remo, not at all.
Now, you say you're stalking Nibali, but I'm starting to wonder whether you're stalking me, because we saw you in the Creperie restaurant in Rambouillet a few nights ago. Last night, we bumped into you in the back streets of Nevers. You claimed you were trying to find somewhere to watch the Milan Champions League game. But how are you finding Paris-Nice so far?
As you know, dear Lionel, I'm here in Paris-Nice to work. But my head, my brain works every day, 24 hours a day, also for other stuff. And for example, restaurants, football matches in the evening, because I learned from a lot of big riders, then in stage races, and for sure, nobody can doubt that Paris-Nice is a stage race, certainly 8 stages and not 21 as a Grand Tour, but a stage race. So in the stage races, the more important thing is to recover from our work all day long. And so for that, these things, restaurants, football matches, little walks are really important.
They are indeed. They are indeed. What did you make of the crepe in the Creperie restaurant a couple of nights ago? It's not the kind of thing that you would eat in Italy, is it?
Exactly. I have to confess that not an excellent level, Lionel. I'm also really fond of crepes, and I know that, and also our listener maybe already know, but I can also tell them that the best part of France for crepe is Bretagne. So now, unfortunately, we are far from Bretagne, and so crepes are not so good. But, our hope, my hope, then in few days, we arrive near the beach in Nice. This is the main target of this race. Not Nibali, with all my respect, also all my respects to Geraint Thomas, TJ Slagder, all of them. But the sea and beaches are really more important.
Well, we've got 3 days down at the beach, so it's going to be a nice weekend for you, Ciro. But you're not the only person making his Paris-Nice debut this year. Earlier in the week, I spoke to the young British rider Simon Yates. Now, Simon, you may remember, won the Dartmoor stage of the Tour of Britain last summer, and he's turned pro for Orica Greenedge, and I wanted to find out how he found his first day in the World Tour. Simon Yates, the first stage of Paris-Nice was your first race at World Tour level, so how did you find it?
Stressful. I think that's the one thing I noticed, even like the races beforehand, just with sort of the professionals. Just there's a lot more pressure and a lot more focus of everyone being at the front and being in position. And even more so here. I think we're lucky that this year it's such good weather. You know, I've only heard it's real bad weather here normally, so yeah, quite lucky in that respect.
Which of the pro races have you done before, and how much of a step up in level was it in terms of the speed, in terms of the nervousness, that kind of thing?
Well, like I say, it's just a nervousness, really. Obviously, the level's a lot higher. You know, everyone turns up with the best guys and the better teams, and you know, it's not really maybe except for maybe the real top guys. You know, it's not a preparation race anymore. You know, we're sort of into the season, and so yeah, I think it is a bit of a step up, but it's not as big as I thought it would be. I don't know how hard it was yesterday, and you know, it wasn't an easy stage by any stretch. But yeah, we'll see how the rest of the race goes, and then.
You got a point in the King of the Mountains, or a couple of points in the King of the Mountains. Was that something that you looked at the road book and perhaps targeted in the morning, or was it an opportunity that presented itself on the road, or, you know, what motivated you to go for that?
Oh, no, I didn't really go for it. I just ran on the front with a couple of the other guys, and it just happened to be my turn in the front when we hit the climb, so, yeah.
But it does give you, you know, you're off the mark in that competition. Does that change anything today with any climbs on the course? Is it something that you'll look at?
No, I don't think so. I think today is just all for the sprint, and we were a bit unlucky yesterday with the crash, and so yeah, hopefully we can change that around and have a good go today.
You're listening to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast, powered by Sharp.
So let's just recap a little bit of the race, Ciro. Nasser Bouhanni, he's always good at this kind of race, not quite the level of Kittel or Cavendish as a sprinter, but it was good to see him win and also to defend the yellow jersey for one day.
Exactly. I know a little bit his story, maybe also the majority of listeners already know his story, I don't know, but you know that in the winter period he trains as a boxer. Yeah, exactly. And his myth, his legend is Mike Tyson. And now he's reading the biography about the life of Mike Tyson. So, I mean, it's an interesting guy, this Nasser Bouhanni. Someone in the group told me that some years ago, I mean, he's still young, but some years ago it was maybe 20 or 19, he had also a little quarrel with Alessandro Petacchi after a stage of the Tour of Turkey. The meaning is that, well, this Nasser Bouhanni has no fear of anybody, and for that he's an interesting guy for the sprint. For me, he's not still ready to win a big classic as Milan Sanremo for the moment. Maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but he's really interesting.
He certainly is. He strikes me as quite a pugnacious character. He's got quite an aggressive streak. Let's hope that we don't see him trying to take a bite out of somebody's ear like Mike Tyson did with Evander Holyfield all those years ago.
Yes, exactly. Good, well say, as you can say in English, Leo, that is true. I mean, in cycling, we are used to the most strange things. So, who knows? For the moment, no ears eaten, but who knows in the future?
I don't think you're encouraging that, though, are you, Ciro?
No, not at all.
Okay, so the second stage was probably, as I said before, more notable for Gianni Meersman sitting on the back of the Omega Pharma Quickstep car for so long in the final. This is not something that's unusual in cycling. We do see it all of the time, but perhaps because he was in the green jersey and perhaps because he was a contender to win the stage, the commissaires came down quite heavily on him. I spoke to the Omega Pharma Quickstep sports director, Wilfried Peters, and as you can probably hear, he wasn't really up for discussing the controversy. Wilfried, yesterday Gianni Meersman crashed at a very crucial point in the race, and obviously there was a slight controversy because he was very close to the bumper of the team car trying to get back. I suppose the first question is, where were his teammates? Was it not possible to get the message to them to come back and help Gianni?
At that moment was not possible. One that was outside the car, the riders not see that, and that was a big discussion about left and right, and then I was too busy with going back in the bunch.
Obviously, the priority for the rider is to get back into the bunch, and it's not uncommon for all riders to sit on the bumper for quite a long time in races. Do you think the issue was that it was so close to the end of the race and that he was in the green jersey, and it makes him more visible to the commissaire?
I think it's a normal situation. I think the commissaire must need to make some things like that. My job is going back in the convoy with the cars. and the road was blocked for that. There was no cars, and then all the other cars needed to pass me, and then it was too difficult in all the cities, left and right. And then there was close with the car. I said, okay, when I come to the bunch, it did it by itself.
Obviously, Gianni is injured and has gone home from the race, and he's at hospital this morning, we gather. But in terms of the penalty that he was given by the organisers, were you expecting that? Do you think that is the right response from the commissaires?
Okay, this is the rules. I can't say nothing about that.
But we know it's common in bike racing that this happens. Do you think there's a better solution? Because when you have a crash, there is no real alternative for the rider. Is that how you see it?
So every time like that, normal, the rule is everybody need to close the convoy. And okay, there was not car. And everybody closed the convoy, and sometimes, okay, this was in the final, that was a different. But after every crash is some car, guys after the car. So no, nobody come back.
In terms of the rest of the race, what is your objective here now? Do you feel you have a card to play in the overall, or will you look for a stage win?
First we look for a stage win, and then hopefully we can make some things with Jan Bagerland and Stibar for the classification.
The Cycling Podcast with humansinvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
So that was Wilfried Peters there, pretty much playing a straight bat, as we say in England, Chiro. He didn't really engage with the problem. He said it's normal that a rider will sit on the bumper of a car like that. But obviously it does, as the organisation and the commissaires say, it does give cycling a bad image when people are tuning in to watch the race and they see the leader in the points competition 6 inches, 30 centimetres from the bumper of the car.
Yes, exactly. But, I mean, in this case, I mean, we know that this kind of thing happen sometimes in the final, but in this case, TV show everything. So, in my opinion, no doubt about the decision of the commissioners. The sad fact was that Gianni Mertens had physical problems, so he has to leave the race. I mean, it was a good shape and it was a pity for him, yeah.
Indeed it was, yeah. So he went back to Belgium to be treated for his injuries from that crash. Are you a motor racing fan at all? You're interested in Formula One? Did the finish at Magny-Cours yesterday, did that strike any particular interest in you? I thought it looked quite good. The crowd was not maybe as big as we'd had hoped for, but it was interesting to watch the peloton use the big wide roads and the sweeping corners and really make the most of the road.
I'm a fan of Formula One, also motor, and the final yesterday was fascinating, yes. And the strange fact, I mean, the coincidence, was that one German guy, as John Degenkolb, German as Sebastian Vettel, that now is the greatest champion in Formula One with 4 world titles in a row, and German as Michael Schumacher, maybe without any doubt the most winner in Formula One with 7 worlds and 91 GP. We already know that Michael Schumacher has some great important physical problems. Now he's still in the hospital in Grenoble, and John Degenkolb after the stage also gave some words, important words for Schumacher. And the coincidence, moreover, is that Magny-Cours was the circuit in which Michael Schumacher won more in all his career, 8 times. So incredible coincidence.
Indeed, yeah. I gather from the organisers of ASO, the reason the race finished there was because the city of Nevers preferred for it to be there, and the organisers were more than happy because the infrastructure is all there. They have all of the press, the setup for the press, plenty of room for the team buses. I wonder whether you think the Grand Tours could do finishes like this. I remember in the 1989 Tour, they finished on the circuit in Belgium at Spa-Francorchamps. Raul Alcala won, the Mexican rider won the stage that day. And I remember being struck when you watch the Formula One races, you don't get the impression of the steep downhills and uphills, whereas when somebody's riding on a bike, the circuit takes on a whole different characteristic. Do you think it's something that we could see the Giro at Imola?
Why not? I remember that, for example, some years ago in the Giro, Petacchi won a stage in Mugello for motor, and also in Imola some years ago Pozzato became Italian champion. Also, for example, I remember that Vuelta started from Assen And the Tour de France, the grande part of 2009 was in Monte Carlo, in the streets of the mythic GP, so why not?
So, John Degenkolb then, he won the sprint yesterday. People are talking about him as a potential winner for Milan-San Remo. Are you surprised that at the moment Giant Shimano are not going to take Marcel Kittel to the Primavera?
No, I'm not surprised. I spoke about this just yesterday with Lionel Marie, one of the sportive director of Giant Shimano, and he explained to me then it has been a technical choice on Cipressa, and Poggio is convinced that Kittel, when as Cancellara and also Geraint Thomas, why not, Chavanel, all the others, that they can move on Cipressa and Poggio, for Kittel can be too hard. For John Degenkolb, not. Also, for example, today we had another example, because we was able more or less to arrive with the main group. So why not? In my opinion, yes. We can't remember. We have to remember that some in 2012 he arrived fourth at the Worlds in Valkenburg, and it was the car where to pass a lot of times. So why not?
Well, I caught up with Geraint Thomas yesterday after the finish in Magny-Cours, just to ask him what he made of the finish on the motor racing circuit. And this is what his impressions were. Okay, Geraint Thomas is just warming down after coming onto the Magny-Cours circuit. How did you find it coming onto the motor racing circuit there?
It was really racing from like 30, 40k out. Yeah, the boys rode really well for me, and I didn't really have to do anything until we got maybe 5k to go, and then I just had to sort of float around and try and stay out of trouble. And I thought it'd be okay on that motor racing circuit, but it was anything but. It was hectic. Bodies everywhere and people nearly crashing, and fortunately just stayed close to the front out of trouble, and another day down.
Why was that? Was that because it was windy out there, or because the road's so wide it gives everyone a chance to think that they can move up?
Yeah, I think here there's not really one team that can take it up. A lot of teams have fast guys, but no one's really got a full like 6-7 guys that can go. You know, they've all got like 2 or 3 strong men, so it kind of, everyone has a chance and everyone can swamp, and there's just bodies everywhere.
This is a real rouleurs race this week without a time trial. A time trial would probably give you an edge in the pursuit for a podium place, but you're still right there in the mix. Was today a case of just not losing anything, not getting caught behind a split, because not really a day when you could get up there and get in the top three for a time bonus?
Yeah, the first 3 days was all about that, just not losing time, being in front of the splits and maybe trying to get a second in one of the sprints if I could, which I managed to the first day. So it's been good so far. I think it's all down to the legs on the climb now tomorrow.
So tomorrow is Belleville, isn't it? And then the next day is Fayence, I think. Is it the one at Fayence that you're looking at most closely?
Yeah, stage 6 into Fayence is a GC day for sure. You know, it's a tough climb. I know the climb is it's at the end of 220k as well, so for sure there'll be gaps there. That'll be the biggest day, I think, for GC, but I think tomorrow's going to be pretty decisive as well. I think everyone's going to test their legs. I'm sure Nibali, Rui Costa, those type of guys are going to go. Hopefully I'll have similar legs to Ruta when I felt like I was climbing good, so if I have the same as that, then I think I'll be there or thereabouts. So I guess we'll soon see.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. For more articles, go to humansinvent.com/cycling.
So that was Geraint Thomas there. And he said in that little interview that he anticipated stage 4 to Belleville being the first important battleground of the race. And he was absolutely right. Tom Jelte Slagter, who won the Tour Down Under last year when Geraint Thomas was third overall, he was talking in the press conference about starting his season this year a little bit later and specifically targeting the Paris-Nice. Saw on Twitter earlier that Jonathan Voort has made a comment saying Slagter and Thomas are not bad for B riders, you know, riders of the next level down, because obviously last year's winner and runner-up, Richie Porte and Andrew Telansky, are not here. So we're seeing new names come forward in stage races all the time.
with this parkour for sure. I heard that someone thought that also John Degenkolb could do a kind of thinking of the about the general classification. Maybe it's too much, but for sure there will be some new guys, but also an old guy in a certain way, as for example the world champion Rui Costa. Why not? He seems to be in good shape, and so he could be one of the possible winners of the overall.
What did Nibali do today? Was he anywhere to be seen in the finish?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke, as usual, with him after the race. He told me that his sensations on the climb were good but not excellent. And so he passed with 5 seconds behind on the last climb. In the he used the descent to stay with the main bunch. He tried at the end to earn some seconds, but it was not possible. I mean, for him, this race is necessary to build up condition, not more.
You didn't try to get into the bus with him, or, you know, you're trying to go to the hotel with him, or you're just keeping a safe distance for now?
This second choice for me, for the moment, is the best, Lionel, because, as I already told you, we have to arrive safely at the Tour de France. This is our main goal, so it's important also in these races to keep distance, you know.
What did you think of the race today? It was quite an exciting climb on the Mont Bruy, the final climb. It was steeper and a lot narrower than I think people were expecting. And then the descent and the finish was almost like a Tour of Flanders on a sunny day.
Every day in this Paris-Nice from now to the finish in Nice will be as a classic. I mean, this is the meaning of this race, and in my opinion, it's not bad.
So who is your tip to win?
My tip is Rui Costa.
Rui Costa, the world champion, to win Paris-Nice. You heard it here first from Ciro Scognamiglio of Gazzetta dello Sport.
But it's necessary, it's too important to say to our followers, to our listeners, maybe my tip on bike races are not so good as my tips as beaches or crepes. I mean.
Well, you can take whatever you want from that. You know, Ciro, I think, is just trying to back out of saying anything that he could be held to account for, I think. Earlier on this week, I also spoke to Steve Cummings, who won the Tour of the Mediterranean in the south of France last month. He set up that victory with a time trial in the second last day, I think it was, and then he still had the job to do on the Mont Faron, which is an almost iconic climb on the south coast of France, near to Toulon. So I asked him about that, and whether he felt that the absence of a time trial in Paris-Nice has altered the complexion of the race for the better or for the worse. Steve, you've had a fantastic start to the season, second in Dubai and then winning the Tour of the Med. What's been different for you this spring?
Just I haven't been sick, or that the program's been the same. I had a good winter, didn't get injured, and consistency really, that's about it. And then maybe the races suited me more with time trials and stuff, like before. Maybe I did races that didn't have those time trials and stuff. So
the Tour of the Med, of course, very famous race, and you set up victory by winning the time trial, but then you still had to finish the job on Mont Faron, which is kind of one of the iconic climbs of the south of France. A lot of history on there. What was it like climbing up there, knowing you were in contention for the GC?
You say it's iconic, and it used to be before, maybe 10 years ago, like a real test for like all the spring classics riders would go there and test themselves against each other. I mean, it was great. I'd done the climb once before in Tour of Med, and I think I can't remember, I was top 10 or something.
Can you describe the character of the climb, because it's quite steep in places, isn't it, and it's got the switchbacks, and not that you were looking, but the views off to the right when you're overlooking the sea are fantastic.
Quite a fast downhill, and there's a lot of traffic islands, so you need to be well placed, and it's quite narrow and steep at the bottom, and then it flattens off and the road gets smaller and kind of smaller, and it's bumpy surface, and I don't know, it's maybe 8-9% average. It's a nice climb.
I was talking to Max Chiandri, one of your sports directors, a few minutes ago, and he said that a race like Paris-Nice would probably suit you perfectly if they had a time trial in it. So are you slightly disappointed that there's no time trial this week?
Yeah, I guess I am, really, but I knew that before. Yeah, it would have been good to have a time trial and have a chance to go for a stage or something, but there isn't, so I have to take other opportunities and try and help the team.
And what's in your race programme over the spring and leading into the summer? Is the Tour de France on the agenda?
I hope to be selected for the Tour, and then before that, after this, I have Waregem, Circuit de la Sarthe, Flèche Wallonne-Liège, and then hopefully a little break, and Tour of Belgium, Switzerland, and then hopefully the Tour.
Obviously the Tour starting in Yorkshire, does that add a lot for you, starting the race on home soil?
It's going to be like I guess a bit of a celebration for British cycling and stuff, so it'd be great to be there, yeah, part of that.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. Interviews and analysis. We've got the big talking points covered.
So that was Steve Cummings there. The Paris-Nice is halfway over, or halfway still to go. It depends whether you're a glass half full or a glass half empty type of person. I said earlier in the show that we have a bit more to hear from Dave Brailsford, and after we talked about the minor controversy of Richie Porte leaving Paris-Nice before it had started in order to lead the Sky team at Tirreno Adriatico, I also asked him about the fallout from the World Track Championships, where Dave Brailsford was in the news a little bit because of particularly the men's side of the team underperforming, certainly compared to recent years. So this is what he had to say about the Track Worlds. Just looking back a week or so to the Track World Championships, you attracted a little bit more criticism for not being there this year than you did last year when you didn't go to Minsk, for much the same reason, I imagine. What was your thought process in leaving the track squad to Shane Sutton and the rest of the coaching squad, and how have you reacted to the reaction to that?
I think Shane Sutton's the most experienced track coach in the world, I'd say, and the best. He's more than capable of, if you're going to take anybody and say, could you go off and run a track competition, please? You know, Shane would be top of the list for me, and for most other people, I think. He doesn't lose his enthusiasm. He's watching, when he watches a track race or track rider or an event on a track, he's watching in colour when everybody else is watching black and white. What he's seeing and he tells you about it's incredible, and his perception of it, he knows how the riders are feeling. He's made for that job. He's brilliant in that environment. And then we've got a very good backup team with the coaches, very experienced coaches. We've got Keith Reynolds who organises it all. It's a super well drilled setup. And actually, I think it's true that when we do go to big competitions, the job's done by the time we get there. I think people can draw opinion of whether I should have been there or not, but the fact of the matter is that we'd already agreed it, we knew how that was going to operate, and so I don't think we should mix that too much up with results. And what I see from the Worlds is a young team who, all bar the men's team pursuit, which I think everybody recognised was a disappointing result, I think that team I see as a team on the way up. I'm not sure what everybody else is watching, really. I'm not sure what everybody's getting excited about. You lose Chris Hoy, you lose Vicky Pendleton. That's a massive blow to any team. So when you look at the men's team sprint, who are equal with 500, they're equal with the best in the world. Young Philip Hines again put the fastest lap in the world in the whole competition. Jason then is man two, and then we're trying to develop a young guy into man three, and we're making progress, and anybody can see who looked at it and breaks it down into the numbers can see that we're making progress. And in 2 years time, the 2 years between now and Rio, if we keep persevering, hopefully the trajectory is good enough, a bit like it was with Philip, a bit like it was with Jason the previous time around in Beijing, that actually you think we stick to that trajectory, we could be there or thereabouts. And I think that goes with for quite a few of the events. The women's team pursuit, it's a different event. 4 kilometres is not 3 kilometres. 4 women is not 3 women. It's a different event. So people think, oh, we've got this fantastic record in this event we'll call team pursuit, but the actual event itself has changed. And when you look at the age of some of the young girls riding in that team pursuit now, they're relatively inexperienced, they're performing at a phenomenal level, and it's very, very exciting stuff. So I don't have I can see why people are getting a bit flustered maybe about, when you just look at it on paper. But when you look underneath the performance, is there cause for concern? In my opinion, no. Is there some work to be done? Of course there is. Halfway through an Olympic cycle, it's always a moment to switch on.
What about your own involvement? Because you've hinted in the press a little bit that you're looking at the medium term a bit. Chris Boardman made his comments about the team needing its figurehead perhaps there, which may or may not be the case. But have you thought any more about where your future lies?
Well, I think the comment I made, and I think this is where it might have been misconstrued a little bit, the comment I made was that post-Worlds will sit down and review everything, which is what we do traditionally. And it's you know, it sounds bloody boring, I'll give you that, but it's the way we work, you know. And so what we'll do now is we sit down, we regroup, we give it a little bit of time, so the emotion of the results and the emotion of the travel and all the rest of it kind of die down a little bit. You get the numbers out, you analyse, let's have a proper look at what happened, let's have a look what we can learn. Could we do anything differently? Is the structure that we got, is it optimal? Can it work? Is this the best way of doing it? Do we need to change anything? And you go through everything else, you know. So we'll look at what we'll stop doing, what we'll start doing, and what we'll continue to do. And I'm as much a part of that mix as anything else. And I think if I wasn't, there'd be a problem. So my point was actually, as always, we'll sit down and review where we go. And that's what we'll do.
Okay, just lastly, you've also been in the news a little bit because you're going to get involved with the England team. Can you give a little bit of insight into what your role is going to be? Presumably not picking the starting 11 or taking coaching sessions. And with Steve Peters offering his assistance as well, should I put a cheeky fiver on England for the World Cup?
Yeah. No, not if I'm involved, that's for sure. I don't know a lot about football. No, but in all seriousness, I think what's happened is pretty straightforward. You know, there's quite a lot of the guys involved in sports in Britain. A lot of us get together and we share ideas and we talk, and it's just part of the job, you know. And that's, we see what we can take from rugby, or we, you know, Matt Parker's in rugby now, and the two other, the performance analysts are both in rugby, and you know, we know guys in a Formula One world, we know the football lads, and we know each other. Then they come and see us and see what we're doing. And as part of that dialogue, you know, you say, well, actually, why could you maybe come and see, like, let's think about tournaments. We do a lot of tournament events, and so we've got to go and spend, you know, 6 weeks away in the boredom, and you're tapering, so you've got more time on your hands than before, you're less fatigued, and people want to do stuff, and all of the little things that you do there could be relevant to somebody else who doesn't necessarily do tournament kind of performances all the time. And it's the nuances of that, really. So, you know, I know Roy, and he said, you know, would you come over and just maybe have a chat to the lads before going? And not in terms of anything to, you know, I'm not going to make a case for 4-4-2 or the Christmas tree formation or whatever else it was. It's not my area at all. But what I do know is how we've gone about trying to get, you know, 20 or 30 athletes to perform at the best of their ability over a 6 or 7 week period where, you know, daily events. And there's a bit of a knack to that, you know, and so we'll share some of that, and they can take if they want, they can leave if they want. But from Steve's point of view, I've been a strong advocate of Steve for a long time, you know, and obviously brought him into sport from the world of psychiatry and medicine, and he's been a great asset to us because he gives you such an insight into how you operate yourself, which is most important, and then you can start figuring out how you're operating in stressful situations, how you operate as a team member, how the team impacts on you, and all these other things, you know. And I think very simple things, when A lot of athletes will think about, and a lot of people will think about the consequences of an event before it happens. So they start worrying about, well, what happens if I win? What happens if I lose? What am I going to look like? What's, you know, God, I'm getting worried about this now. But actually thinking about the consequence of it is a futile exercise. What you want to think about is how am I going to be the best on a day? And he is just so brilliant at all of that stuff. And I think he's worked with Steven Gerrard for quite some time. And obviously now he's working with Liverpool. And he's worked with various people, and I think it just makes absolute sense. The question isn't why he's doing it now, is it? The question is why hasn't it been done before, in my opinion, because I think all of the sports have, you know, all modern sports have a big backup team of psychologists, psychiatrists, and it's about time that football followed suit, which they are doing, to be fair. So hats off to Roy Hodgson and his team for doing it. I think it's a great move.
Okay, well, Ciro Scognamiglio of Gazzetta dello Sport has been a more than able stand-in for Richard and Daniel today. You are like Geraint Thomas to their Richie Port. Thank you very much, Ciro. All that remains is for you to say farewell to your army of fans, your growing army of fans who listen to the podcast.
Yes, and Matt, my question is, when next podcast with me? Who knows? When, Lionel? You are the boss. When?
Well, which of the... that's very nice of you to say I'm the boss. I think Richard would probably disagree with that.
But now you are the boss in Paris-Nice because maybe Richard is going holidays. This is the truth.
Richard is going on a very long holiday shortly, but will you be at any of the classics? Will you do all of the spring classics?
The first part, Flanders and Roubaix.
Okay, well, maybe we'll see you there.
Why not? See you soon.
Thank you, Ciro.
You're listening to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast, powered by Sharp.